and you are listening to the show.
Good morning. It's the show on KJZZ 91.5. I'm Steve Goldstein.
And I'm Mark Brody. Coming up, could using retail space for housing be a solution to our current shortage?
And we're kind of reaching that initial lifespan in a lot of our commercial spaces. And so this is really an opportunity to re-envision those sites to create a better quality development, one that's more walkable.
That conversation coming up later this hour.
But first, leaders of the anti-abortion movement achieved a huge victory with the Supreme Court's decision in the Dobbs case, essentially overturning Roe v. Wade by moving abortion rights under the purview of states. That result was a culmination of the effort to keep and make abortion illegal, which began many decades ago, even before the 1972 Roe ruling. In her book, Tiny You, A Western History of the Anti-Abortion Movement, author and professor Jennifer Holland explores how states like Arizona and Colorado were affected by abortion and the effort by some religious activists to prevent it from being accepted in mainstream America. I spoke with Holland earlier and began by asking how unique the movement was in the West and what it had in common with what was happening in the rest of the country.
Every place, and this is true in most ways outside these four states as well, as they began by a group of white Catholic professionals who usually began these early anti-abortion movements. And they sometimes were doctors, as they were in Phoenix. Sometimes they were lawyers, but they were all white Catholics and they were mainly professionals. And the movement would change over time, but that's really how it began.
Many people will think of the evangelical involvement in the 80s and 90s with this movement. When did that group of people actually become leaders of the movement?
So the movement at the beginning was almost entirely, though not entirely, Catholic. And they really, though, tried to bring in other religious people because they were really worried that being all Catholic would be held against them. And so in really early protests and things, they people would ask them, "Are you Catholic?" And they would either refuse to answer or they would say, "No, we're Protestant," or and that was a lie, or they would just say we're a whole host of different things. But they really would be the huge majority of activists through in the late 60s throughout most of the 70s, and there were always a smattering of other religious people, but this really starts to shift in the late 70s. You had small groups of evangelicals who were pushing their denominations to change their policies about abortion. Famously, the Southern Baptist Convention had tentatively supported the Roe versus Wade ruling in 1974 and 1976. Mm. But by the late 70s, a lot of these evangelical denominations had been going through massive theological change, that you had people who were more fundamentalist, more rigid theologically, that were pushing these denominations in all sorts of politically conservative ways. And so by the end of the 70s, you have evangelical religions that are much more open to anti-abortion politics, much more open to both anti-abortion activists among them and also even the Catholics outside who are still really manning the movement. And as you say, in the 80s and 90s, they're not only a part of the coalition, they are perhaps the most visible part of the anti-abortion movement, though Catholics always would be sort of, I think, central, if not the backbone of the movement.
Jen, let's go to the title of your book, Tiny You. What specifically does that mean?
It relates to the argument of the book in that I really argue that the reason why this movement was so successful is because they waged a war for hearts and minds in sort of the everyday spaces of people's lives, that they brought their arguments and all this fetal ephemera into very personal spaces. And they then helped create a relationship between people and the fetus. They made people feel like the fetus was a tiny version of them. But it also is drawn very specifically from a pamphlet. One of my chapters is about the way that the movement tries to get young people and children to be activist and see themselves in the fetus. And this pamphlet was all geared towards young children, trying to explain pregnancy, really. And they say everything at the moment of conception, everything that was you was already there. This was a tiny you. And then they go on to explain very, very explicitly abortion. They say, you know, abortion is the moment that parents get overwhelmed and they decide to murder the baby in the womb. And so they're very explicit about what this is. But so they both connected this child to the fetus, and then they've immediately moved to asking that child to imagine its potential murder. And this is sort of the doubleness of what the movement asks a whole host of people to do, but especially children, to connect and then see themselves in aborted fetuses. They ask young people to, in their phrase, think of themselves as survivors of the abortion Holocaust, because they're survivors because they were born.
Let me ask a specific question about Arizona and the anti-abortion movement. Why did you write about the late Senator Barry Goldwater? He didn't tend to be as conservative on social issues as many of his colleagues, and yet he had an impact in there.
Because I think he really says a lot about shifting conservative politics in the West, and also shifting politics of the Republican Party in the nation. And of course, he is famously, right, Mr. Conservative. Historians and everyone else sort of give him credit for starting this conservative movement that would eventually take over the Republican Party. And yet, by his 1980 election, his senatorial election in 1980 in Arizona, he knew that he couldn't win without anti-abortion voters. And he himself was not against abortion, that he had helped his daughter secure an illegal abortion in the 50s. And his wife was a big supporter of Planned Parenthood in Arizona. But by 1980, he knew he couldn't win without them. And so he tells Arizona Right to Life and other anti-abortion groups that he'll basically fall in line and support anti-abortion legislation in Congress. And he wins, basically with their tentative endorsement. But you know, when he actually gets in back into the Senate, he doesn't do any of the things he said he would for them, because I think it was near the end of his career. Mm-hmm. But this is this big change, right? Even Mr. Conservative couldn't win without social conservatives by 1980. And that really speaks to both a conservatism that's taken over, but a social conservatism that is not actually Barry Goldwater's small government conservatism. And that social conservatism has as much roots in Arizona as Barry Goldwater does.
Finally, Jen, you chronicle the movement that has gone on for 5 or 6 decades. Last month, the Supreme Court, as we know, overturned Roe v. Wade with its decision in the Dobbs case. How much of a victory do the anti-abortion activists you write about consider this to be? I suppose this is exactly what they were working toward?
Yeah. This isn't the end goal, but I can't overstate how big a victory this is. And this is why I call the anti-abortion movement one of the most successful social movements of the 20th and 21st century, at least as much as we've seen of it. Because this movement was able to turn back 50 years of precedent. They really were able to really reverse the tides of history in this profound way, in overturning Roe versus Wade. This is something that I think for a long time activists hoped for but didn't think would actually come. And this isn't the end, though, of course, because the overturning Roe just sends the issue back to the states, and that's never been the end goal of the anti-abortion movement. It's always to ban abortion everywhere. Now the movement has to get to passing laws and enforcing laws in the states that they can, but also trying at federal levels to try to either get a future Congress or perhaps the Supreme Court again down the line to ban abortion across the country. Hugely, I think, sort of inconceivably successful, but it's not over. They're not done.
And that is Jennifer Holland. She is author of the book, Tiny You, A Western History of the Anti-Abortion Movement.